Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 13, 2018. IGAD kicks out an opposition party from the High-Level Revitalization Forum.
All we are saying is that we are committed to the peace process under the High-Level Revitalization process. We're committed to it, but we also reserve the right to criticize the weaknesses of this process.
And clashes continue between government and rebel forces outside Bentiu.
And attacking government position and post is also abuse of succession hostility. So in self-defense, we have to defend ourselves as a government.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Wise, has suspended the participation of the opposition group People's Democratic Movement at the High-Level Revitalization Forum. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of IGAD's letter to the opposition group in which Wise wrote in part, "I note with regret the internal division within PDM and the contest over representation which makes it difficult for my office to facilitate your participation," end of quote. The letter further states that, in light of the above, IGAD has decided to suspend PDM's participation in the High-Level Revitalization Forum process until PDM has resolved its internal disagreement and recommit to the IGAD-led revitalization process. The leader of the People Democratic Movement, Hakim Dario, says IGAD's special envoy has no business in PDM's internal party issues and says his group wants peace, a peace agreement that meets the needs of the South Sudanese people. Dario confirms his group has been kicked out of the High-Level Revitalization Forum.
The People's Democratic Movement is not currently in Addis because it has been sanctioned by the IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, who suspended or withheld participation of PDM in the talks on the 14th of Saturday after having received invitation to attend.
Why would he prevent your group from participating in the Saturday meeting? And this is happening when he also invited you. He invited you and also told you not to come.
The issue is that I think they were very unhappy about a memo that the PDM wrote to the AU chairperson, AU commission chairperson, His Excellency Mr. Musa Faki Muhammad, about the reservations and concerns about the way the mediation and the peace process is going on in Addis. We just expressed reservations for which we apologize if that was in any way offending to the IGAD office. So we have raised these reservations to the AU because IGAD is an institution of the AU. They are accountable to AU. If we feel that there is a chance that this is going to fail, then I think the AU should really take over the mediation process.
I spoke with somebody from the office of the special envoy, and that person told me that the reasons for your suspension is because you express a lack of trust in IGAD's mediation. Is that correct?
I think it was a misunderstanding. It's not that we do not trust the good work, the fidelity of the office of the envoy, who did everything possible to report to the United Nations Security Council. He did his best, to mediate the process, to represent the best interests of the High-Level Revitalization Forum. But I think the key issue is not that we lost, faith. We actually sent an apology if we were misunderstood on this point. All we are saying is that we are committed to the peace process under the High-Level Revitalization process. We're committed to it, but we also reserve the right to criticize the weaknesses of this process or to raise reservations about it, to raise concerns about it, and to look further afield in terms of whether really what is going to be the outcome of the peace process.
My source within the office of the special envoy also told me
that one of the other reason why your party was suspended is because your house is in disarray. They were asking you to put your house in order.
But that's not a matter for the special envoy of IGAD to go to each and every political organization and ask them to put their house in order.
But if you're not agreeing with your members, you're not agreeing with your party members. I mean,
that's not the case. That is not the case.
What is the case? What is the case?
We have a position. We have a position paper, which is representing us. A copy of which is with the envoy from the time there was a pre-consultation before the high-level revitalization process started to kick on. The issue that is being raised about PDM not agreeing internally among their members and so on is not true. It's not reflecting the reality within PDM.
How can you change South Sudan when you're not able to handle your internal issues? You're fighting among yourselves even before reaching Juba.
Yeah, but I think what the focus should be on the people. There is half of the population of the country outside in refugee camps, in POC centers, in displaced camps. Over half of the population of the country is outside. They're running away from their own government, right? These are the people that the peace process should be focusing on. It's not the elites who should benefit. It should be the people who are in refugee camps, over 2 million or 3 to 4 million, across, different countries and so on. These are the people that the peace process should focus on, and that's precisely what we are writing a memo to the AU about.
That's Hakim Dario, leader of the People's Democratic Movement, a group that has been suspended at the High Level Revitalization Forum. He was speaking with me from London this past hour. 8 opposition groups will meet tomorrow in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, to discuss outstanding issues in the 2015 collapse peace deal and how to reach a final settlement of the conflict in South Sudan. As you just heard, the final phase of the Revitalization Forum is set to start at the end of this month in Addis Ababa. But one South Sudanese researcher says negotiators should take their lead from the U.S., which has already put in place aggressive measures to hold leaders in South Sudan accountable. Ayen Deng Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
The region's political leaders are letting down the people of South Sudan, according to Luka Byung Deng Kwal, professor of practice at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. Byung says the hybrid court of South Sudan, which was supposed to deal with atrocities and war crimes of alleged perpetrators, has yet to be established. And even though the African Union can introduce sanctions, it has done nothing but issue strongly worded statements.
In fact, what is happening is that the IGAD itself, the African Union Peace and Security Council, took some of the decisions that are going to impose sanctions on the individuals that are believed to be spoiling the peace agreement or obstructing the peace agreement, every now and then just sending the threat.
U.S. pressure has come in the form of individual sanctions against former Army Chief Paul Malong, Information Minister Michael McQuay, and other high-profile individuals in South Sudan. A domestic U.S. arms restriction has been placed on any and all arms transfers to South Sudan, a move that is seen as highly symbolic since the U.S. government does not send weapons directly to South Sudan. More recently, the U.S. Department of Commerce slapped trade restrictions on 15 South Sudanese oil-related entities, which the State Department says have contributed to the ongoing crisis in South Sudan. Byung says all of that is indicative of a more aggressive approach by an aggravated State Department.
You have these winners of war are actually interested in exacerbating and prolonging the war. And I'm happy that the Global Witness Report was a very clear case of guiding of the need for sanctions against those individuals.
Activists in the diaspora, like Nyamal Tutdil, co-founder of the Nya Eden Foundation, says recent actions by the State Department are a good start but are not nearly enough. Tutdil says corruption starts at the top of the leadership chain in South Sudan, but no one is stepping up to hold them accountable.
Let's just use our president, for example. SELFA has a whole bunch of money in the U.S. banking system. And so whatever bank he has that money in, then that bank also will get in trouble for holding that money for them.
The U.S. supports the High-Level Revitalization Forum, which is aimed at jumpstarting the 2015 peace deal. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley told the U.N. Security Council in September that time is running short. Byung shares those same concerns, adding, a big problem with IGAD is its failure to prioritize deadlines.
It should become an endless process, which of which some people are just benefiting from this. And I hope this should be the last chance. And there are options available. One option is very clear, that what I said earlier, the issue of sanctions and arms embargo. And it should be an African initiative to be supported by the international community. And U.S. in particular is so keen in making sure that these individuals who are actually against the peace agreement, they should be punished. And the region is having enough tools in terms of sanctions, in terms of arms embargo, in targeting some of these individuals.
South Sudan's diaspora has been accused in the past of intensifying divisions. A report by Peace Tech Lab found diaspora communities around the world have increasingly voiced their grievances through social media, often using inflammatory language and images. Adama Dieng, the UN Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, told the UN Security Council in late 2016 that the media, including social media, is being used to spread hatred and encourage ethnic polarization. While Tadil agrees the diaspora should not spread hate, either online or elsewhere, she adds that South Sudanese living abroad could do a lot more to further the peace process in their country.
I feel that the diaspora definitely need to get involved in the policy world, because a lot of the policymakers are not South Sudanese. A lot of the so-called experts are non-South Sudanese. I would prefer South Sudanese Americans to really get involved in whether it's policy, advocacy, or just any arena that has to do with South Sudan. And because we know ourselves better, and we kind of have a balance of the both world, you know, we're also Americans, and we're also South Sudanese, so we can actually kind of have a balance.
Next week, a group of South Sudanese activists and political advocates plan to gather in front of the White House to bring attention to South Sudan's conflict, now in its fifth year. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to Bantu, where government and SPLA-IO forces loyal to Riek Machar clashed near Bentiu, the capital of the former Unity State, on Wednesday. An official from Northern Leech State says four government soldiers were wounded in the fight. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesperson Colonel Lampol Gabriel says government forces attacked rebel positions in Karken village. Northern Leech State Information Minister Lam Tangwar confirms that government forces clash with forces loyal to Riek Machar on Wednesday and Thursday outside Bentiu on the road leading to Nialdiu. Tangwar claims SPLA forces attack rebel positions only after rebels had attacked government forces several times.
We actually proved right on day 11 when they actually attacked a convoy of SPLA sent by the government of Northern Leech to go and actually check on Nialdiu. And their clash is actually had to be pursued by the government, by the forces. Until now, we got their own safe haven where they usually live. And now that living place has been destroyed completely. Now they are on a run.
Tangwar is accusing SPLA-IO rebels of denying aid workers access to vulnerable populations in the area. In a statement issued earlier this week, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, confirmed at least one humanitarian worker was killed by armed men last weekend when an NGO vehicle clearly marked with insignia of the Catholic Organization for Relief and Development Aid, or CORD Aid, was shot at along the Nialdiu-Bantu road. The statement says several aid workers were held at gunpoint. Rebel spokesman Gabriel denies his group was behind the attack, adding that the SPLA-IO would never stand in the way of aid workers helping people in need.
Humanitarian workers always help the population, the suffering population, the suffering civilians. And these people are mostly found in our areas of control because they don't have access to cities like Juba. They cannot go to buy things in the market. So they survive entirely on humanitarian agents.
Gabriel admitted to this program yesterday that the SPLA-IO is holding 7 aid workers in Yei River State. Northern Liechi State Information Minister claims that the government forces adhere to the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by the warring parties last December, but insist they cannot sit idly by as rebel attack civilians and aid workers in the area.
Endangering the humanitarian workers is also something that is not acceptable. Insecuring the civil population is also not acceptable. And attacking government position and post is also abuse of cessation hostility. So in self-defense, we have to defend ourselves as a government.
Gabriel claims he does not know if there were any casualties on the opposition side.
When they came, they were hit very heavily and they went back. Issue of casualty, we never got any report of casualties from the ground. But what we know is our forces are safe and they're okay and they have full control of Tarkan again.
Minister Tangwar says the area is calm today and is encouraging citizens and humanitarian agencies to return to their normal activities.
There's nothing for the humanitarian to be worried about because the stability is still there in 100%. Civilians are still ongoing with their own activities. And also this clashing is very selective. We are very selective in terms of where they are running, where we are following them.
Tangwar says the government has deployed additional forces to the area to protect civilians and humanitarian workers. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, hundreds of South Sudanese continue to pour into Uganda each day. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why should you care about your reputation?
Say, example, you get a gig, like for us decorators, when you get a gig from Parliament. If you have a bad reputation, of course you won't pass. But if you have a good reputation, you're honest, you're reliable, you know, you're flexible, then you can pass for that gig. So reputation is number one.
I care so much about my reputation because good name is better than riches. Once that is damaged, it's difficult to repair.
I think it's important for one to have a good reputation because it's through your reputation that people will give you respect, because when someone trusts you, then definitely you earn their respect.
That is all I have. If I don't have any reputation, I might as well walk on the streets virtually naked.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Life in South Sudan is forcing more people to leave the country. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says nearly 17,000 South Sudanese have sought refuge in neighboring Uganda since the beginning of this year because of insecurity, hunger, and a lack of basic services. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The UNHCR says the influx into Uganda, which already hosts more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees, continues at a rate of about 300 refugees per day, despite the 2015 peace deal and the more recent cessation of hostilities agreement. UNHCR spokesperson Dunia Khan says if the current pace of South Sudanese displacements continue, an additional 600,000 South Sudanese will flee the country this year and that most of them will end up in Uganda.
There hasn't been any day when we have not received new arrivals. It could be smaller number, but at a busy day it could reach to more than 1,000. Since the beginning of this year so far, 16,800 South Sudanese refugees have arrived in Uganda.
Uganda remains one of the most underfunded refugee crises in the world. In 2017, Khan says the agency received only 37% of the money it needed. In 2018, donors have so far contributed only 6% of the $700 million needed for the South Sudan refugee operation in Uganda.
The quality of education is affected. The quality of services is affected. Not everyone is receiving even the standard required assistance during emergency.
John Ayume fled fighting in Yei River State in 2016. Ayume says he had been living in the bush on the outskirts of Yei since that time. He says after sending his family to Uganda, he decided to remain in South Sudan, but as the insecurity worsened, he eventually fled to the Omongo camp in the Rhino refugee settlement in Arua.
The country not supposed to live empty, even if it is hot, hot, but some people need to be with a strong heart to stay until there. So we are still keeping, but the things come hard.
Ayume's neighbor, Omega Robert, at the Omugo camp, says he wanted to return home to Omorobo in Yei River State after completing his studies in Uganda. But after the people who supported his education lost their jobs in South Sudan and left the country, the 22-year-old was forced to abandon his studies. He soon joined his former sponsors at the Omugo camp.
Things are still hard there. That was still it, ongoing process. But I don't think whether I will go back there. Maybe if there will be peace, and then I'll come. But I don't know it if there will be peace yet.
Speaking in Arabic, 70-year-old Justin Sebit, another new arrival at the camp, says there is so much suffering back home that South Sudanese like himself have no plans of returning ever.
I don't care even if I die here. I mean, people like me have already fled three times. The first time I fled as a child during the Anyanya War. The second time was during the SPLA War when I was already a married man. And again this time, I have told my children not to worry if I die here in Uganda.
If UNHCR predictions of 600,000 more South Sudanese leaving the country in 2018 come true, 3.1 million South Sudanese will have fled the country by the end of the year. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
Still in Uganda, Uganda's government announced today it may take in 500 African asylum seekers from Israel. Israel wants to relocate thousands of Africans, mostly Eritreans and Sudanese, who are said to have entered Israel illegally. Halima Athumani has the story for VOA from Kampala.
Uganda's State Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees, Musa Echweru, acknowledged the request from Israel during a news conference Friday.
The State of Israel, working with other refugee managing organizations, has requested Uganda to allow about 500 refugees of Eritrean and Sudanese descent to be relocated to Uganda. The government and my ministry are positively considering this request.
The UN Refugee Agency says some 4,000 African asylum seekers have voluntarily left Israel for Uganda and Rwanda since 2013. Reports both countries have continuously denied. Speaking to reporters Friday, Echweru denied the existence of any so-called secret deals between Uganda and Israel on the matter. He said applicants for the 500 slots currently being discussed would be rigorously vetted.
We are processing. The eligibility committee is standing by just to receive the first batch, and we'll process them through the assessment. And those who will meet our criteria will certainly be granted asylum immediately.
He did not offer further details, though he did seem to indicate the relocations to Uganda would be voluntary. Israel is home to about 40,000 African asylum seekers. Most are from Eritrea and Sudan and say they cannot return home for fear of conflict or oppression. Many arrived in Israel between 2006 and 2012. Israel's government rejects claims that Africans are refugees, describing them as economic migrants and infiltrators. In January, Israel issued an ultimatum to the single men in the group, accept a cash payment and a plane ticket to a third country in Africa, or face detention and deportation. The Israeli government's plan to begin forced deportations in April has been put on a hold by Israel's Supreme Court. For Uganda, welcoming asylum seekers from Israel could prove to be a touchy subject. The country is already straining to host more than 1.4 million refugees, most of whom have fled conflicts in neighboring South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo in just the past 2 years. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
From Kampala, we come back to Juba, where the hope for peace in South Sudan is fading as the search for an end to the conflict continues. but listeners of a popular radio show known as Sawa Shabab say the program plays a positive role in promoting peaceful coexistence and unity among different communities in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio in Juba met up with fans of the show to find out why the program is so popular.
Rose, I believe that your decisions are important when it comes to your marriage.
Mama, you will have to support me. Are you on my side?
Yes, my dear. I know what you're going through.
Sawa Shabab character Rose talks to her mother about her right to choose her future husband instead of being forced by her father into a marriage with a man she does not love. Sawa Shabab fan Anthony Lubang Suoro says he follows the weekly drama series on Radio Miraya and Bakhita Radio because he finds it educational.
It is a kind of a learning process, and that's why there are so many seasons that they come in. There is season one, season two, season three, and I know that they're now in season four. It is like now being in school, because in school you go to school, you start from nursery until you finish your school. I think it has brought a positive impact into the youth.
The program, which is locally produced by Amalna in collaboration with the Peace Tech Lab and the United States Institute of Peace, aims to promote peace and educate the youth by portraying scenarios young people deal with in real life in South Sudan. The program airs in both English and simple Arabic. Suoro says he especially likes conversations on Sawa Shabab about marriage traditions in South Sudan.
There's one in season four, I think it's the beginning, whereby one gentleman wants to marry a lady, and the parents wants someone who is having a lot of cows, you know. I know he was asking about 200 cows, of which that gentleman who impregnated the lady doesn't have the cows. And it was the uncle who wants those 200 cows. And that's one of the part that I always like, and is one of the season that's the best to me.
Joyce Bakwa is another fan of the program. She says she likes the program because of the show's dialogue about the need to address tribalism, which she says fueled the 2013 fighting in Juba.
Because of what happened, you find maybe this one, the relative or someone of his tribe killed my own. But then it will cause that hatred, making people, innocent people, having grudges for no good reason. But this Sawa Shabab thing, this drama, it has put a lot of knowledge. The first time I heard it, I was like, wow.
Bakwa says she now sees a change in attitude of many young people who listen to the show. Ladu Festo, a listener in Juba's Nyakran West neighborhood, says the program should be expanded to reach a wider audience in South Sudan.
I expect more to be done so that those who are from the grassroots also should understand what is taking place, because this thing normally is only done in the city. So those who are in the rural area, they may not be important to understand what is taking place, and they keep on doing wrong thing to their fellow South Sudanese.
Nicola Franco produces the Sawa Shabab program. He says season four, which began airing last month, introduces new topics.
Now we brought some new characters, which is we have Noura, and we have Charles, and we have the journalist. So we have these three new characters, and each and every one going to his direction. Like the journalist is talking about hate speech, and then Charles is about the trauma because he's an affected soldier, together with Noura. So these are our new characters.
Franco says season four will educate young listeners about trauma and will include an educational curriculum that focuses on gender, national identity, and youth empowerment. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song I Am Sorry by Abo Dibian. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a peaceful weekend. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Choose men to feel, yeah.
Tous tes cadeaux ne valent plus rien. Tu dis que j'en fais trop. Mais comment? Toi qui disais m'aimer vraiment. Dans tes habitudes, aucun changement. Remballe tes bijoux et tes vêtements. Je ne suis pas de celles qui aiment bêtement. Tu me disais que j'étais la plus belle, qu'aucune autre ne pouvait rivaliser. Mais baby, arrête. Oui, arrête de m'y